Going Linux, episode 220, Computer America, number 66. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy. Whether you are new to Linux, upgrading from Windows to Linux, or just thinking about moving to Linux, this podcast will provide you with valuable information and advice that will help you in Going Linux. We hope that you'll find this and all our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done. In today's episode, Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America.
Hello and welcome into the Computer America show. It's the nation's longest running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. Computer America is heard around the world and coast to coast. And I'm your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Grayson.
Yeah, you see, you fall right into the rhythm of it.
Just like learning a bike, you never forget.
That's right. And Grayson Hamilton is my co-host for the next couple of weeks. So, yeah. Grayson, of course, is our gamer expert, and normally here on our Gamer Tuesday show, but he's going to be co-hosting me with me for the next 2 weeks, and we're kind of oscillating between Grayson and Charles Tendell, and it's working out to be really a really nice arrangement. Both of them are completely, you know, are very, very knowledgeable on their subjects of expertise, and they're joining me here help me interview some of the other guests that we have here on the program, and it's working out really nice. Now, Grayson was away for a while, for a couple of weeks, but I know you were supposed to be here last night, but due to some traveling arrangements and some technical problems, we figured we'd just wait till tonight to bring you back in, and so here you are, and let's say welcome back. So did you have a nice couple of weeks off, Greg?
It was, you know, it had some ups and downs, yeah. But you know, there was some obviously some traveling involved. It was nice to be back in Texas for a little bit, see the family.
That's right. Yeah.
But everything is settled. I'm back in Minneapolis. Just as the leaves start to turn, it's going to get cold here soon.
Yeah, it is. That's right.
And you can imagine my excitement, and by excitement I mean terror.
Okay. Now, I know that actually Charles Tendell is going to join us this coming Thursday, day after tomorrow, because that's our security show. And, of course, Charles is a certified ethical hacker. That's what he does, and we're going to be talking about hacking issues and stuff, and he'll be with us on Thursday as well. But we got a great program lined up for you tonight. Of course, it is the third Tuesday of the month, and that means it's our All Linux show. That's right, exactly. And joining us here is our Linux expert. You know, the Linux operating system, of course, continues to be more and more popular. So we decided way back when to devote an entire Computer America show each month to the subject of Linux. And if you have a Linux question, well, tonight's the night for you to give us a call. Now, joining us, as I said, is our Linux expert, Larry Bushy. Larry is the creator and host of the Going Linux podcast. Larry, welcome to Computer America. How are you?
I am very excited. We have another fun-packed show ahead of us, and so I'm eager to get started. And good to meet you, Grayson.
Yeah, I was going to say hi to Grayson. Exactly.
A pleasure to meet you for the first time.
Yes.
So there you go. So we're going to get started. Now, what we do is that I always ask Larry to come up with a topic, a general topic for the both hours, or at least for the first hour. The second hour, we do emails that Larry gets over the month, which he thinks that he picks out and thinks that may be relevant to the most listeners, and then we read those and he'll comment on those. That's in the second hour. In the first hour, I ask him to pick a subject, and tonight's subject is going to be, what can I do with my Linux computer? That's kind of a broad topic, but I guess it is.
but we'll narrow it down a little bit.
Okay.
Not too much.
No.
But a little bit. We'll narrow it down.
Now, if you, we always encourage people to participate. Now, one of the things that we do here at Computer America is Larry gives us some cheat notes, if you will, to go through it, and we make them available to you here at our listeners of Computer America. Just go to our homepage at computeramerica.com, and under the archives pull-down menu, you'll see it says show notes. So select that, and then it says click here for the new show notes, and you will see today's date, September the 17th, and it says both hours, third Tuesday of the month, it's all Linux show, and that we actually have a link to the Going Linux podcast in there. And then that's the Linux topic for the month. What can I do with my Linux computer? And then there are two links there. One of them is Talking Points for the first hour, and the other link is email for the second hour. If you click on Talking Points, it will open up a Google Docs document, and you'll be able to follow along with us. And this is important because not only can you see what we're going to be talking about, but Larry has included links to some of the many things that we'll be discussing. So they're there that you can click on. You can kind of follow along with us. It's really a nice way to, you know, to just kind of keep in touch with what it is that we're speaking about on tonight's show. And the topic is, what can I do with my Linux computer? So why don't you take it away, Larry?
Okay. And I have actually just noticed that in the Google Doc, Google has added something new. There's little icons for people who log in to the document. And I see we have four people logged in. Of course, they haven't logged in with their names. So it shows up in Google Docs as Anonymous Mink, Anonymous Badger, Anonymous Gopher, and Anonymous Oxotl. I have no idea what that is, but it must be some sort of animal. But anyway, tonight of all nights is a night you want to be in that Google Doc, because we have a lot of links. We're going to be talking about most of them, and those that we don't get to, we'll leave it to you to explore them on your own. But you really want to be in there, and you want to be clicking on these links as we discuss each of these, because we're going to be talking about what can you do with your Linux computer. Mm-hmm. And we've on the show here before, we have danced around a lot of the things that we're going to be talking about. Some of them we've talked about directly, but others we have kind of skirted around to indicate that, yeah, there's a lot of things that you can do with Linux. You can do basically anything that you want. but that's really the answer to the question. So I think that's it for our show tonight. No, seriously, though. There's an awful lot that you can do. And, you know, you may have installed Linux on a computer you already have, or you may have taken the plunge and gone out and bought a computer with Linux pre-installed on it. But now what? What can you do with your Linux computer? And that's what we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about some of the specific kinds of tasks that you can perform on Linux, and also some of the applications. We're going to talk about how the names of these applications. One of the things that we talked about in the past is the fact that, you know, you may be able to figure out that Firefox is a web browser because it's Firefox on all platforms. Mm-hmm. But you may not recognize some of the names of all of the programs. And so by talking about some of the familiar things that people might want to do with their computer and talking about which applications in Linux do that is part of what we're going to talk about today.
Okay, sounds good. All right, so you bought a computer with Linux pre-installed, so you're sitting there with your Linux computer. And let's talk about some of the bullet points. And obviously, anything you want.
Yep.
little too general. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, just a little. So let's narrow it down a little bit. One of the things that people like to use computers for is to be social or sociable or something like that. So whether it's Facebook or Pinterest or Evernote or Gmail or Google+, Linux works with all of those cloud-based applications and desktop applications that you want to use for social interaction on the internet.
Right. And let me just interrupt you here, because also, because we're coming to break, also what I'd like to do, and I know you don't have any notes on it, but since Grayson is our gamer expert, maybe you could talk just a little bit about some of the Linux games or things that people can do. You know, I know
we can do that.
We can do that too, because and we can kind of bring Gray in on that as well. So music means we're going to take a break, and then we're going to continue on. It's our Linux show. It's our all Linux show tonight. What can I do with my Linux computer? Larry Bushy is here with us. Grayson Hamilton, my co-host. And since Grayson is a gamer expert, we're going to talk a little bit about some of the Linux games that you can do on your computer as well. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. We will be right back. Don't go anywhere. Twenty-one minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. It's our All Linux Show. My co-host Grayson and I are talking to Larry Bushy. It's all about gaming, and the topic tonight, of course, is what can I do with my Linux computer? And we're starting off with being social, you know, from your favorite website to Facebook and Pinterest, you know, and beyond. So let's continue on from that point. And I see you've already added in a gaming bullet, which is nice.
Yep, too. I'm this is interactive show notes as we go.
Yeah.
So we'll get into the gaming in a second. But on the topic of social, one of the things I'd like to cover is the fact that there is a distribution of Linux that's specifically designed for the cloud operating system. We've talked about, there are a couple of them, and we've talked about one in the past, and that's the Chrome OS. The Chrome OS is something that is developed by Google, and it's based on Linux, and it's designed for use on the Chrome computers, so Chrome Ultrabooks. We've talked about the Chromebook Pixel from Google, and we've talked about the other Chromebooks, but the other one that I want to talk about, and there may be others out there, but the one that I have tried and used most recently that I was quite impressed with is something called Peppermint Linux. I tried Peppermint when it was in version 1. They're now on version 4, and we have a link in the show notes to Peppermint. And the reason I call this a cloud-based operating system is because although it's a full-fledged Linux distribution, and you can install any software you want on there that is available for Linux, it comes pre-configured for use with cloud-based applications, much like you would expect from a Chromebook. Uh-huh. In fact, its default browser is the Chrome browser. It comes pre-installed with a lot of Chrome apps that are apps built for the Chrome browser, pre-installed. One of the things that the Peppermint folks have done is they've made use of the technology that the folks at Google have provided to allow you to run an application, one of their browser-based apps, as though it were a desktop application. So what they've done is they've put, for the mail application, for example, they've put a shortcut in the menus to Gmail. And when you open it, you'll recognize it because it's Gmail,
yeah.
But it doesn't open in a regular browser window. There's no navigation bar. There's no menu at the top.
Sure.
It's as though Gmail were its own standalone desktop application.
Very nice, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And they've done that with a lot of the other applications, including document management. Of course, they're using Google Docs there. But even image editors and sound editing and picture editing, all of those, they have links to cloud-based applications.
Yeah, it looks very clean. You can download a 32-bit version or a 64-bit version. They make it right there. It's called Peppermint 4.
Mm-hmm.
They have some screenshots here, too. It looks really nice. It looks very clean.
It is very clean, and it's very fast because there's almost nothing installed on your hard drive. It's all internet-based. But that is not to say that you can't install applications. Mm-hmm. In fact, it uses the Ubuntu Linux repositories and the Linux Mint repositories by default. And as a result, you can install anything you want. So if you don't want to use Google Drive for your word processor and spreadsheets and presentation software, you can install LibreOffice or OpenOffice or any of the Office
Very
suites
nice.
That we've
yeah.
talked about.
Yeah.
You have access to any Linux application that's out there.
Very, very nice. And it is it's Peppermint 4. It's, now you can purchase a CD if you want to, but you can just go ahead and download the 32 or 64-bit version of this operating system. And they build it being a very lightweight, stable, and super fast operating system. You know. So,
yep. Exactly. It's super fast because there's not much to it.
Yeah.
It's lightweight because there's not much to it. But it is. completely configurable. It is a full Linux distribution, unlike the Chrome OS from Google, which is a customized version of Linux that's designed to just run Google apps. So unlike that, Peppermint 4 is designed to run those Google apps, but it's also designed to run any other Linux application that you want, including games.
Yes, games. And Gray, I don't know. You're on the show notes. Can you see that where he's added the gaming? Because it's a live screen.
Oh yeah, no, I'm right along with him.
Okay.
So there you go. So one of the things, Gray, the Linux operating system may or may not be all that familiar to you, and maybe we should kind of take a step back and talk a little bit about what it is. So before I go on and on and on about something you already know, what do you know about Linux?
Well, it's, I will admit it's not nearly as much as I should know, especially if I'm trying, you know, if I'm the gaming expert. But in a lot of people I know, it's, Linux is kind of foreign to anyone but, or to the casual audience, Linux is kind of foreign, because I do know that it's used in more of the design and the computer science aspect of it. But what I do know is, for a fact, is it is a very simple and very powerful operational software. And by that I mean, for those who become acclimated to the environment, for those who know how to utilize it, Linux can do things that can do things better than Windows or Mac put together. And I have seen this by some of my friends, and it's actually quite impressive as to the not just the breadth of things you can do, but the depth, if you're willing to put in the time to learn it. But that's, but right. Like I said, it's a very casual understanding from my perspective, and I've certainly wanted to learn more about it. It's, of course, obviously a matter of time and dedication to actually put into learning Linux.
Sure. Well, and so you're quite right. Linux is something that if you're a developer, you really have to be on Linux, unless you're developing specifically for Windows or specifically for the Mac, in which case you can get along just fine with those specific environments. But if you're developing software for Linux and Mac and Windows and Android and iOS, you need something that's much more powerful, and Linux gives you that. But that's not to say that for the casual computer user who just wants to, you know, log on to Facebook and check email and see what's going on in the news and then shut it down for the night, that there isn't something there on Linux for them. And that's really where the focus of tonight is, just talking about some of the common things the average person, or maybe a little more than average user of a computer would want to use their operating system for. And many people really don't care what the operating system is. They just want it to work. They want it to work well. And they want it to do the things that they want it to do. And I'd like to just reassure people that you can do just about anything that you want on Linux, except get Windows viruses. But that's a whole other issue.
And that's what we call a perk.
Yes, exactly. So let's move on to games, shall we?
Yes.
Okay, so, you know, whether you're old school and you want to use Pong or Space Invaders, or whether you want to use Steam to run Counter-Strike or something like that, Linux can give it to you, and we'll get into more depth when we come back.
All right, well said, Larry. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. Larry Bushy, we're talking about what can I do with my Linux computer. We're on the subject of Linux games with my co-host Grayson Hamilton, and we will be right back.
Minutes after the hour, welcome back to the Computer America Show with Craig, your host, Craig Crossman. I am your co-host, Grayson Hamilton. And we are currently talking to Larry Bushy on our Tuesday episode of the It's All About Linux-themed edition of the Computer America Radio Show. And before we went to the break, we just actually touched on the concept of Linux and gaming, which a lot of people actually have a little bit of a misnomer about. You think, well, video games happen on consoles and they happen on the PC, but what do they have to do with Linux? And the truth is, gaming has a lot to do with Linux, almost everything. And I think as we were going to get into it, Larry, you were going to kind of educate us a little bit about how much gaming actually has to do with Linux, with the Linux system.
Well, yeah. And so Linux has been around in its form of Unix well before Windows was even invented. And certainly Unix is one of the root operating systems that's at the base of Mac OS X as well. And games on computers started maybe even before Unix, but rather than go back to the caveman and games on the caveman's computers, let's just start with Unix. And many of the games that are available for Linux today either started with versions that were text-based applications back in the text-based operating system days, and were developed for Unix and then for BSD, and then from there for branching out into Linux and Windows and OS X as well. And some of those are still around today. If you want text-based games, you can still get them for just about all of those operating systems if you really look for them. But gaming on Linux has been something that has lagged behind even OS X. And I say even OS X because for consoles and Windows, those two have been the premier platforms for running games. But recently, over the past few years, game developers have been looking at Linux because it's a very stable platform. Its performance, maybe 5-10 years ago in the graphics area, wasn't quite enough to do the super high performance stuff that you need for games. But recently, with advances in what the Linux community has been able to do for graphics and with graphics card compatibility, even companies like Steam have taken on Linux and have decided to make Linux one of their premier platforms for developing games. And I don't recall the title, but my understanding is a recent release by the folks at Steam was released first on Linux. So, whether you want something like Battle for West Noth or Starfighter or something like that, or something really simple like Tux Racer or something like that, or you want to go all the way into something that you already have on another platform, perhaps on Steam, something like The Cave or Bastion or Team Fortress or Counter-Strike or any of the, almost any of the Counter-Strike titles, Half-Life, mm-hmm. Half-Life 2, a lot of those. And I'm reading from a list because I'm not a gamer. But Grayson, you could actually fill in a little bit on, are these games any good?
If there's one thing you should know in the video game world is that if Valve makes a game, A, it's going to be good, and B, a lot of people are going to play it. Uh-huh. And now what I will say, and I do agree with you, is the Valve co-founder and CEO Gabe Newell has been a proponent of Linux since he worked at before he founded Valve. He worked at Microsoft, and he's always been a proponent of simplicity. And in his experience, and he talks openly about this, is Linux is a simpler, easier to work with software. And that's why in the past couple years, especially with the beta program such as the Steam Living Room program, which allows you to run the Steam website in your living room off of your television, and we don't know about this, but there's going to be an announcement regarding the legendary Steam Box, which is a rumored console saying that Gabe Newell is going to make a console that runs Steam, but it's going to be run off Linux software. And the reason right. for that is because he wants to bring Linux into the world and more into the open atmosphere. He wants more of the casual gamers, of the casual audience, to get a sense of Linux and to see that it's not this weird cousin of the two major mm-hmm. softwares that everyone's used to. And matter of fact, it's not only a predecessor, but it's actually a simpler version. And if you give it the time you can do amazing things with it that are actually more streamlined than either of the other softwares can. So from a personal standpoint, I think Gabe Newell is doing an excellent job, and as he's shown, you can not only make amazing games on Linux, but you can design amazing games for Linux. And the evidence is already there. He's just trying to bring it forth. He's trying to give it a sexier look, if you will. And I think that's a good way to put it. He just wants to make it more of a competitor in the gaming atmosphere because he knows it's worth its credit, and I agree with him.
Well, you know, there are two things that lead me to believe that now is the right time to be in the unpaid business that I'm in to help computer users to learn how to use Linux, and that is gaming on Linux as propelled by Valve and Steam and Windows 8. Those two things are going to be driving more people to look at alternatives, whether that alternative is the Mac or something like Linux. I think now's the time to be on that ground floor, and I'm just happy to be here and to help people to take some of the mystique out of and the misinterpretation and the misconceptions about Linux and dispel those things that aren't quite true or may have gotten morphed into something else by other companies. Like Microsoft had called at one point Linux a cancer, characized it very, very badly. And it's just another operating system, and it happens to be one that you can install, download, and acquire for free, and one where most of the software is also available at no charge, whether that's a photo editing software or video editing software. An audio studio for editing audio or something as simple as a word processor or spreadsheet application. There are titles for Linux that are available for free. And, as more commercial software companies like Valve start developing software for Linux, you'll see more and more non-free software, non-free both from a definition of proprietary being non-free, free as in freedom, but also non-free meaning charge for it software, paid for software. You'll see more and more software developers, proprietary developers, offering software for Linux. And in this list that we have, and I know we're not going to be able to get nearly through all of this, there are some titles in the list of the software that we're going to talk about here that you can download a free version as a trial, but if you want more features and so on, you need to pay for it, even though it's Linux software, and Linux software traditionally has been no charge.
Well, there you go. People, love their games and are willing to pay for them.
Well, that's it. That's exactly right. And there's an organization that puts games out for Linux that they market under the term Humble Indie Bundle, indie being independent games. And they do a survey. Basically, it's a pay what you want model for these games. So you get a bundle of game titles, and you pay what you want. And they do a survey of at the end of this offering and determine who has paid the most on average. And oftentimes it's Linux users who pay the most for these bundles of games.
Now, does that surprise you, Grayson? I wouldn't have thought that.
There's always going to be people who are looking for an easy deal. But Linux users, as I have, is the experience that I have, are simply inherently more loyal to the process. They understand what goes into development, what goes into the whole process of creating games like this. So when there's these humble bundles that come out, they oftentimes are the ones who are willing to go the extra couple of dollars. And like and like you said, it's because, you know, they a lot of the times what they're getting is free. So why not spend a couple dollars and help out the developers?
Sure. Makes perfect sense. All right. We're going to continue on. We got one more segment to talk about what can I do with my Linux computer. You would be really surprised. And we'll continue on with more of the things that you can do with your Linux computer right after this. We are continuing on doing our topic, which is our All Linux show with Larry Bushy, and we just finished up gaming, and I don't know if we're going to have time to get to all the points, but we can kind of go over some of them, but you can see all of them on our show notes page at computeramerica.com under our talking points. So why don't you continue on, Larry?
Sure. We've got a lot of different categories here, and as I said at the top of the hour, a lot of links here, so you'll want to explore them yourself. But some of the things you can do with Linux, if you like to immerse yourself in your vacation or family photos and browse and edit and share them, or turn your best pictures into gorgeous photo albums, you can take your photography to the next level with tools that allow you to edit and bundle them up into a photo album, and three of the titles that are software titles that you can use to do this are Shotwell, Digicam, and Darktable. So Shotwell and Digicam are photo editing, and Darktable is kind of like Lightroom. You'll find the Linux community likes to flip the brand name on its head and names its product kind of the opposite of what what the brand name would be. So Lightroom became Darktable, and so it competes directly with that. So Digicam and Shotwell would be some excellent photo editing software. And if on the movie front, if you want to create your own blockbuster movie or just a short instructional video, and maybe you've got those boring home videos that you want to turn into something, or you want to share them on YouTube, or make a full-length video masterpiece, there are four titles that are at the top of my list, and there are plenty of others that would help you to do that. One is OpenShot, a nice, easy-to-use video editing program for Linux, Lightworks, Shotcut, Shotcut, and Kden Live, Kdenlive. All four of those are professional-grade video editing software that many of those would compete with what you could get on OS X.
Okay. All right.
All right.
All right.
So let's say you're into, podcasting, and you've got a nice recording studio with a professional microphone and a mixer and all that sort of stuff, or you want to just, you've got a garage band and you want to edit your own music down, or you simply need something to do audio editing. Well, there are plenty of ways to do that on Linux. The programs that you might want to look at first are Ardour, a very professional-looking program, Jocosure, and Audacity. Of course, Audacity is a stable on all platforms, whether it's Linux, Mac, or Windows. And
it's been around for a long time.
Isn't it great?
It's so simple.
I use it all the time.
People are like, oh, I use GarageBand. I tell them to get out. And to reiterate the point, Audacity is free, not just on Linux, but on all platforms, and it's an excellent podcast one. It's one I use all the time.
Audacity. They're version 2.0.4. That's for the Mac, but I think they keep the revisions uniform across all platforms. But it works for it's available for the Windows, for Mac, for Linux. It is a really nice program. I mean, you can spend, when BIOS was out, Peak was like a $495 program. Apple has reduced their product, I think it's called PerformX, I believe it is. That used to be $400-$500. Now they brought it to $99.95. They brought it down a lot more, but still, you know, Audacity is completely free, and it is no slouch. It is it has all the things that you most all the things that you want in an audio editing software. It's very visual. You can see the sound wave. You can edit visually. It's really, really slick.
Right, and if you need something even more than that, I don't know why you would need it, but if you are running a professional audio editing studio, for example, you might want to check out Ardour. It has all of the multi-track recording and editing capabilities that you're looking for, you know, and even mixing capabilities. And maybe you're doing an audio track for a video. You can do all of that on Linux, and even the professional studios are using Linux for doing some of their work. And I know of at least one studio that uses all Linux for its audio work. And, you know, whether that's Audacity, Ardour, or something else, there are plenty of applications out there for you. And with Linux, it's a good, solid, stable platform, and you're not going to risk getting the same kinds of infections from malware that you would with Windows, for sure.
What does Ardour sell for? Is that how much does that cost?
It's free.
So that's free. So I'm looking at this thing. I mean, it is really sophisticated. I mean, you've got editing features here that rival anything that I've seen. This is a...
Yeah, it's all professional software, and you'll find many of the titles that we're talking about here are professional-grade software. It's all given for free. You might look at it as a gift from the developer to you, and that's one of the advantages of using free and open source software, is the fact that it is free, but also the fact that it is good, high-quality professional software written by people who develop software for a living.
Right.
So they may be people who are working for other companies, developing other software, getting paid for that. Those companies are making a fortune. Mm-hmm. And these people, they are audio people or video people or word processor people or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And they're developing software that they want to use themselves just for the love of it, and they give it away for free.
Now, as we said, we're probably not going to get to the other topics here. We're going to go to our email. And then if we have time, we'll come back. But, of course, you can see all of them, everything we're talking about in tonight's show. Just go to ComputerAmerica.com, go to our show notes page. It's right there in our pull-down menu. And you can see all of the things that we're talking about tonight for your own edification. Now, we got hour two coming up. We're going to go do emails. Larry Bushy is our guest for this hour. Grayson and I will be back with more Computer America.
You're listening to Computer America. Computers run the world, and we run computers. Call us toll-free, 866-606-TALK. That's 866-606-TALK. Or send us an email to live@computeramerica.com.
Hello, and welcome into hour two of the nation's longest-running, nationally syndicated radio talk show on computers. This is the Computer America Show, and I am your host, Craig Crossman.
And I'm your co-host, Grayson.
And as things happen, just as we were playing the intro, we lost Larry Bushy. he faded out.
He's gone.
And now he's back. There he is. And there you go. So we're doing our All Linux show. And Larry continues on in the second hour. Larry, you there? Larry? Well, I thought he was there. It shows that he's there, but for some reason...
Oh, there we go.
There we are. We okay, there it is. Okay. technical difficulty, but we're back. And we're going to continue on with... but move into the next topic, which is our emails, okay? And you can see all this again if you go to ComputerAmerica.com, to go to our show notes page, and... you'll see, click on the show notes, and you'll see all the information about tonight's show. And then you'll see a second link under talking points, and that's emails. And if you click on that, you'll see our email page, and you can follow along. So we're going to get right into the emails. And this first one is from a gentleman called Norman. And we did a show last time was on Linux malware, if my recollection was correct. And evidently... Uh-huh. He has some further comments on Linux malware.
Right. And so let's get right into Norman's email. He says, "Hi, Larry and Bill." And great. Bill is my co-host on the podcast, the Going Linux podcast.
Now, do you rotate your co-hosts like I do?
No, you know, we've had three co-hosts in the 8 or so years that we've been doing the show. So maybe we're at the same pace. I don't know.
Could be. All right. So continue on.
All right. So Norman's email starts off, "I enjoy listening to your podcast." Well, that's good. Yeah. "I do tend to lag behind just a bit, though. I was listening to the last Computer America episode when you were talking about malware for Linux. Uh-huh. In the whole podcast, I never once heard you mention the most popular Linux distribution that the malware community tries to take advantage of and is the most likely target of the banking malware you talked about. Yeah. What does a large group of people use for banking and other applications? Smartphones. The Android smartphone is the largest target of choice for Linux malware. Although the newest version of Android is always better, most smartphones don't run the latest version. The mobile providers don't put out updates, even if the manufacturers do, because they want you to upgrade to a newer phone. Even though Google updates Android, if you want the latest, you have to get a new phone or use CyanogenMod, which is not what most people would put an effort into. This is what I propose to be the primary target of the Linux malware you talked about. Android, because of its open model and lack of updates, makes it a prime target for bad guys. Mm-hmm. Here is a recent link about just such a vulnerability, and we'll have that link in the show notes, of course, one of many since Android became popular. Thanks for an informative podcast, Norman."
There you go.
Yeah, so very good points, Norman. We have Android, of course, is based on Linux, and it is... you might consider it a Linux distribution unto its own. And very good points about the phone carriers not providing all the updates in a timely fashion, even though Google may come out with an update for Android. And, of course, you know, you can say that profit's the motive there, and I wouldn't doubt that that's the case.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. So you're basically just agreeing with him. Nothing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, we were talking about Linux on the desktop, not Linux embedded systems or Linux in other platforms. But you're quite right. Although there aren't really any active viruses for Linux, there is just that one malware that was the first in, what, 5-10 years that came out recently, and it wasn't really all that potent. Banking Trojan, and you really had to go out of your way to infect yourself with it if you really wanted to on Linux. You know, there are many, many more phones out there that the Linux malware writers are targeting, and I don't think that's going to cross over into your Linux desktop anytime soon.
Okay, well, there you go. All right, well, then let's move over to Clay, who listens to you in Myrtle Beach and is commenting on the Going Linux website, a redesign.
Yes. So I recently redesigned the Going Linux website using some tools that I had come across. Of course, website design tools for Linux. So we'll talk about that at the end of the email here. So Clay wrote in, said, "Larry and current co-host."
Okay.
Three times in 8 years. Come on. "I do think the new layout of the page looks clean, but it seems the ability to search the site is gone. From what I remember, I used to be able to search through the site. I think the search box was a Google-provided feature. It would be great to still be able to do that." By the way, Clay, we've added that back. It was an oversight on my part, and it's there now. So,
because a lot of browsers will also have a search engine built into the browser that'll let you find any particular word on the current page that you're looking at, but it only works for the current page.
Right, exactly. So we've provided a Google search box that when you put a term in there, it'll search through our site and our site only. And of course, if you want to search broader Google, just go a little higher in your browser and type it into the Google search box.
Okay. All righty. Okay.
Anyway, so continuing with Clay's email. Also, from what I've heard you talking about, you are familiar with HTML. I have been expanding my linguistics from a technological perspective to be able to do what you are doing with the Maker, and the Maker is the software that I'm using for editing and maintaining our website. I have been learning PHP and MySQL, both of which are open source software. They are often what one uses to make a dynamic page, since PHP is a scripting language and much better than the static HTML, as I heard you mention recently. Mm-hmm. I have been enjoying what I have been learning so far, and I already know the specific use I plan to use it for. Mm-hmm. For example, record keeping of invoices, job logging, general notation records, etc. I think this will be ideal considering I will be able to access it from any smartphone, tablet, or computer regardless of operating system. Although I strongly avoid using any operating system that starts with the letter W. I recommend
Let me think about that. Operating system begins with a W. What do you think it could be?
Yeah, I don't know that word.
Ray, you have any ideas, Grayson? I don't know.
Winix? No. I recommend someone such as yourself to see if this scripting language would be of interest to you so that you can have more control over your web pages. Granted, it takes more time to learn a new language. Learning something is part of the fun, at least for me. Also, I know you have had quite a response to the Nancy feedback.
Oh, yes.
We'll talk about that in a second.
Nancy Gate. Yeah, okay.
Nancy Gate, yes. So, with QuickBooks. But I thought I would add to it as well. Okay, just pile on. Go ahead, Clay. Mm-hmm. Pile on. I had the need for a good bookkeeping solution. I have used and currently use GNU Cash, and it was a great introduction and education in accounting, but it is limited in the business end. Enter SQL Ledger and Ledger SMB. I am still learning about these, but they seem to be what I was looking for. SMB seems to be more of a fork, of SQL Ledger, and according to SMB, it was forked out of a need for a more secure version, which apparently SQL Ledger's developer was not interested in pursuing. Keep up the great work. Thank you for helping me go Linux, going on 2 years now, Clay, in Myrtle Beach. So, a couple things to wrap back around on.
Yeah.
Nancy Gate.
Nancy Gate.
So we had a listener who wrote in and said the one software package that was preventing her from moving to Linux was QuickBooks or Quicken or something, one of those quick applications for Windows.
Right. Yeah,
and we had a lot of feedback on that.
And we're going to get to that. Yeah, and I have to say, Quicken has caused so many, people from moving to other operating systems because Quicken is just basically right now for Windows. They actually stopped it for Mac for a while, but they brought it back. But it's one of those few, you know, that have a dedicated following. We're going to talk more about what happened with Nancy Gate. This is the Computer America Show. We'll be right back. Minutes after the hour here on the Computer America Show. Grayson Hamilton, my co-host, and Larry Bushy, our guest for both hours. It's our All Linux Show. It's the third Tuesday of the month, and we dedicate that program to all things that are Linux. And in this hour, we're doing emails that we received, and we were reading an email from Clay in Myrtle Beach, and he made reference to Nancy Gate or Nancy, and so continue on. What was going? She's basically said that she was trying to run QuickBooks or Quicken, and it just wasn't available for Linux, and that was the reason why she wasn't going to Linux.
Well, she had moved to Linux, except she needed to keep Windows around for this one program, and she challenged our listeners to come up with reasons why she should move to Linux. Mm-hmm. And so we had people talking of, you know, giving her some good reasons, but also some people complaining about the fact that how dare she say something like there is no alternative to Quicken or QuickBooks in Linux. And, you know, everybody needs something different out of a software program, sure, right? Yeah. So Nancy had some specific requirements that weren't being met by the offerings in Linux, and mm-hmm. so I can understand that. But many of the people took it as a personal affront, and so mm-hmm. we had some back and forth, and Nancy got back into it and gave a response, and we had people all over the world responding to poor Nancy, and it's still going on, as you can see from these emails. Yeah. You know, months later, we're still getting comments on Nancy Gate.
Okay.
So just one more comment, and I added another link into the show notes for the Maker. And if you miss that, link, it's makercms.org. And CMS as in content management system. Don't let that fool you. It is a nice web page editor, and you can use it as a CMS system, or you can use it just for editing HTML. It is HTML5 compliant, and it is designed specifically for Mac OS X.
All right. Nice.
And they have, yeah, and they have versions for Linux and Windows as well. The Linux and Windows versions lag a little bit behind the OS X version, but they gave us a mention on their website because we mentioned them in our podcast. And so if you look at their website and go to the examples of websites that use their software, you'll find the Going Linux podcast listed there. They didn't tell me about it. I just happened to bump into it one day, and there it was. Mm-hmm. So I'm pretty pleased that we got a little publicity there and a little exchange for giving them some publicity as well. So as part of one of our recent episodes on Going Linux, I went through our evaluation process on how we ended up with the Maker as the software we wanted to switch to from our old software that was no longer being developed and wasn't capable of HTML5, and how we ended up narrowing it down to the Maker. So you might want to go back and listen to one of our previous episodes on that if you're interested in how we made that decision, or just go to the bottom of any of our Going Linux website pages. There's a link right there to the Maker, or go to the link in the Computer America show notes, and there's a link to the Maker there, and take a look at it for yourself.
There you go. Okay, now we're going to go to Uwe, who writes all the way from Germany.
Yeah, it's amazing the way these electrons just fly through the internet and arrive in my computer all the way from Germany. Thanks, Uwe, for your email. Uwe writes, "Hi, Bill. Hi, Larry. I just bought a PC in May, so Windows and Linux are both new and difficult. It sounds like this is his first computer. In your last podcast, you mentioned Raspberry as a means for learning." I think he's talking about the Raspberry Pi Linux computer. "As I like to roll up the sleeves and get hands dirty, I would appreciate it very much to get information as much as possible to start this project. Could you give me a few hints? At the moment, I participate in CS101 Udacity, quite challenging. I think that might be a university course. I'm not sure. There are also many Linux distros. No clues which one to choose. Perhaps Kubuntu? I have an i7 Windows 7 machine with 1 terabyte of hard drive space and 8 gigabytes of RAM." Well, Uwe, that will handle just about any Linux distribution out there. And Kubuntu is a good choice. There are others out there as well. I would suggest you look at not only Kubuntu, but Ubuntu, Linux Mint, and maybe look at some others as well. They're all free. Try them. If you don't like them, switch to another one. There's no risk. Continuing with Uwe's email, "I listened to a few other Linux shows. Yours is the best. The other shows are mainly a kind of very long pub talk and without timestamps. This is very important because not every topic I do understand or is not interesting in my stage of low knowledge. Listening to the Naked Scientist Enhanced podcast, I notice an interesting feature. VideoLAN, or VLC, showed timestamps when the mouse pointer touched the line where the cursor runs. Sometimes I cannot find timestamps in VideoLAN when clicking information. In iTunes, there is always the player is not convincing. Let me read that again. In iTunes, they are always there. The player is not convincing, so I use VideoLAN, and there I do not find the timestamps as mentioned. You mentioned the podcast is nationally syndicated. What does this mean? Who is paying for the podcast? As I am not prone to online banking, how could donations be made? I do not want to take things for granted. Several times I intend to pay, for example, for some great Firefox add-ons, but there seems just to be PayPal around, which I do not like because they block payments. If you turn up in Berlin, you are welcome. Kind regards, Uwe. So there are a few things to talk about here.
Yeah.
So regarding VLC or VideoLAN and the timestamps issues, I think that has to do more with the podcast that you're listening to. VLC itself, or VideoLAN client, is what VLC stands for. It will only show the listing of time in the if it's in the ID3 tags of the podcast. So in other words, if it's in there in the content, it will show up. Of course, there's the little line at the bottom that shows you your progress through the length of the podcast episode, and that's the thing that you mentioned where your mouse pointer is. It should on the left-hand side tell you where you are, and on the right-hand side tell you how much time the entire episode takes up, so you can kind of do the math and figure out how much you have left. Now, what I've noticed, though, is some Linux, not just Linux, but any podcast that's out there, if they haven't put their ID3 tags in correctly, or if their RSS feed is malformed, the timestamps don't show up correctly. And usually the cause of that is they haven't entered the length of the podcast correctly. They've entered it in hours and minutes as opposed to in just minutes. And so VLC can't figure out how long the podcast is, and it doesn't show the timestamps right.
Interesting, and it makes perfect sense that they would do that, too. Mm-hmm. All right, we got to take a break, and then we'll continue on. This is the Computer America Show. We're doing emails on our All Linux Show. We'll be right back.
Thirty-five minutes after the hour, we're welcome back to the Computer America Radio Show with Craig Crossman. I'm your co-host, Grayson. We're talking to Larry Bushy. I actually got it. I think I got it right that time.
Yes, you did.
You did. Yes, you did.
All right. I'll get it. It'll be automatic the next time. I promise. For the second hour, we've been responding to emails that Larry's been receiving over the past couple weeks regarding Linux related questions, and we'll just throw it back to him, and we can keep on trucking.
Okay.
Okay, that makes sense. So we left off with Uwe's email, and he had posed several questions to us. So let's take the next one in turn. He said, he must have been listening to the Computer America episode, because he asked, you mentioned the podcast is nationally syndicated. What does that mean? Since I'm having trouble talking, Craig, why don't you answer that one?
Well, Computer America is nationally syndicated. It basically means that it's heard across the country in via terrestrial radio stations coast to coast. And we're in cities all over the country. And rather than a show that's not, it basically is just heard in a local station. In other words, you know, you might be radio station WJNO, let's say, in Florida, but only people, it's only on that one radio station. When you're nationally syndicated, the other stations pick you up and broadcast a signal. And usually shows that are nationally syndicated are done through a network of some sort. We're on the Business Talk Radio Network, and so all the stations are a member of the Business Talk Radio Network, and they can choose to carry the Computer America Show. Of course, in this day and age, in the age of the Internet, most all show, every show that I can think of really also puts the show online. So they stream the audio. When they do that, then anybody with a computer or an internet-ready device with audio can listen to that show. And that what happens is that usually makes the show global. I mean, that means you can hear the show anywhere, and the show is listened to on a global scale. And although there are some exceptions, for example, Computer America is heard in the Virgin Islands. You know, that's not part of the continental United States, but it's heard in the Virgin Islands. There's a radio station there that picks up the program and listen to the Computer America show. So that's basically what that means. What I wanted to do is just, you know, I wanted to do a shout out since I mentioned it, and that is the station in the Virgin Islands, and that is WVWI AM 1000. It's heard in Charlotte, Amalie, in the Virgin Islands. Okay, so shout out to all of you out there, and thanks for listening. We actually had a call a few days ago from the Virgin Islands, from someone listening to that station.
Yeah, and I think there's a gentleman by the name of Alex who works at that radio station. And, hey, Alex, I listen to your podcast. So anyway.
Really?
And, yeah, so syndication, there's no syndication involved when it comes to podcasting. So the nationally syndicated that you hear when you're listening to the Computer America episodes is related specifically to the radio broadcast. And your other question about who's paying for the podcast, well, the radio station's advertisers are paying for the broadcast on the radio. But as far as the podcasts are concerned, unless you have some income coming in that I'm not aware of, Craig, or I've got some income that nobody's actually given to me, I think it's you and me, buddy. I don't know whether let me just speak for the Going Linux podcast. It's all on me and the listeners who donate. So there's a donate button on the website. Take this opportunity to plug that. Go ahead and donate if you like the podcast and you want us to keep going. And other than that, we'll keep it going anyway. If you don't have the money to spend, that's fine. Keep listening for free. We're going to continue to support a free operating system with free applications with a free podcast. Right. What more could you ask? Yeah.
By the way, just also just want to welcome a brand new affiliate to the Computer America Show, WKRO AM 1490 in Cairo, Illinois. Just started listening to the Computer America Show. So a big shout out to all of you out in Cairo, Illinois, for listening to Computer America. Again, radio station WKRO AM 1490. Okay.
Lots of plugs. Let's get all those plugs in. Okay. All right. Shall we go on to our next email?
Yes, absolutely. Let's go to Gus, who commented on Nancy Gate.
Yeah, more comments. So he's commenting on listener Nancy's comments about wanting some reasons to use Linux. So Gus writes, with regards to the kerfuffle over Nancy's comments, I have a few comments of my own.
I love that word, by the way. My wife introduced me to a kerfuffle. I had never heard of
it. I think maybe a British term, but I don't know. That's the first time I heard it, it was from someone from England who said it. So there you go. Gus writes, listener Dave pointed out that no open source software replaces Qwiken in terms of functionality, and while that may be true, I find those kinds of remarks to be a great example of looking a gift horse in the mouth. The fact that you can use all the software you want without restrictions for little or no cost is a tremendous gift, and to criticize it for what it is not and to compare it to the software of large corporations is coming at it from the wrong perspective entirely. Linux software is far better in many cases than its Windows or Mac counterparts. What people often seem to forget is that free is often a feature in and of itself. The fact that so many talented people put their hearts and souls into developing great software for free is amazing. And so I find that over criticizing Linux software is off base. When I hear people talk about how the Mac or Windows is better or at this or that, I usually respond that oftentimes the problem is not the tool's fault, it's the fault of the user. Looking at the movies made by the Blender Foundation, you can see high-quality productions that rival some large studios. A movie made with free software that may not have had every bell and whistle can be infinitely better than Joe Schmo with his Mac Pro and his Adobe Creative Suite.
It rhymed, by the way, Joe Schmo.
It did. I think there was a lot of good cadence to that one. When people let go of the idea that when you get what you pay for and realize what a gift free software is, putting up with the little things becomes bearable. Nightwise, a Belgian podcaster we reference quite frequently on the Going Linux podcast, Nightwise says that you should use whatever works for you, and I understand where he's coming from. But that attitude can also hold people back from changing from antiquated Windows shareware to free and open alternatives. Many of the problems, in quotation marks, people face with free software are merely them projecting their biases onto new programs. Different does not make it worse. Dave may have a point about Quicken, but I think that people need to remember that this software is free and that there are talented people who are trying to make the best experience they can provide without restrictions. Criticisms can be helpful, but we need to remember that they're more often than not those projects by a bunch of volunteers and are projects years younger than products like Quicken. If Quicken didn't feel a little more polished than a younger free program, I would be surprised. So that was from Gus. Thanks, Gus, and thanks for piling on to Nancy's comments. Just add all your comments in. Let's come on, guys. Let's add some more.
Well, not to be let down. Andrew in Perth, Australia, comments on NancyGate. You know, all the way. I mean, you really, it's totally global.
It is global. Mm-hmm. And Nancy, you're sitting there. I think it's Louisiana that you're from.
You're famous.
Did you ever think that you would be famous around the world? I don't know. So Andrew's email, he says, "Hi again, guys. After listening to episode 216, listener feedback, I got to thinking about Nightwise's rebuttal on the NancyGate saga. I thought about my reasons for switching to Linux, and I thought I'd share. I once ran Windows XP on my desktop machine, and like most, I kept it going because it was one of the best incarnations of the platform, despite the joke, XP equals extra problems. Vista still gives me the runs even today, and I cannot bring myself to pay for Windows 7 just to have a current operating system. So after life events reminded me about Linux, I did some Googling and found out it was more than the project I had heard about in the early 90s and thought, why pay for Windows 7 when I can use this for free? So on went Linux in a dual boot configuration, and now 2 years later, I don't even have Windows installed anymore. Also, in regards to my laptop, most would agree that unlike a desktop, laptops are only upgradable so far. My 2004 Toshiba Tekra A4, with its lonely Centrino single-core processor, is no match for Windows 7, and we'll find out why when we come back.
There you go. This is the Computer America Show on the Business Talk Radio Network. We're doing our All Linux Show with Larry Bushy. We will continue on when we come back. Stay with us. We're going to finish up probably with Andrew in Perth, Australia, who's commenting on NancyGate. Larry Bushy here for both hours with myself and Grayson Hamilton. So, what is his comment, Larry?
Okay, so he's talking about, he just finished talking about why he switched over to Linux. Mm-hmm. And he says also regarding his laptop, he says he has a 2004 Toshiba Tekra A4 with its lonely Centrino single-core processor, originally outfitted with XP, was no match for Windows 7. And definitely not Windows 8. Essentially, Microsoft has decided my laptop is not worth their effort and are, by proxy, forcing me to buy a new one. Why should I? It still works fine. if just slower due to XP becoming bloated with service patches, etc. over the years. A fresh install of Linux Mint with the XFCE desktop has put a breath of life into my laptop. I know Nancy has some specific requirements, for example, Quicken. I sometimes run Windows in a virtual machine whenever I need to run specific tools that I cannot be bothered tinkering with Wine. I also need Windows to play Worms on Facebook due to a quirk with Flash. All other games work fine. It's just that one. I don't know about whether Worms is going to make the all-time best games list, but it's one of those, I guess.
What do you think, Ray?
Otherwise, I live my life on Ubuntu, and I even like Unity. Please don't shoot me. Keep the shows coming, Andrew. So, Gray, if you're still there, would you say Worms on Facebook is a worthwhile game? Or does it even make the list?
I'm going to be honest and say no, because it's on Facebook.
There you go. Okay. But at least one listener thinks that it is, and it's worth putting up with the hassles of Windows in a virtual machine on Linux just to make it work. So, hey, to each his own, I guess.
There you go. We have time maybe for one more short one. You want to do the one from Robert or one from Tony?
Let's do Robert's.
Okay.
He says he sent in a suggestion for a future episode. Larry and Bill, I was listening to the Podnuts podcast on CPU repair. I heard a lot of information that would be a tremendous help to you and Bill with your podcast, as well as both of you guys in your jobs. It's a gold mine computer shortcuts tutorials PDF books. Just click the link, and I hope it helps. I did not call this one in because I felt you could use it as a resource to research and find things that break. And so he's provided a link to that. And if you go to that link, there's a lot of – it looks like an early 1990s or late 1980s website with red and yellow and blue links all over the place.
It looks like Craigslist.
Exactly. And there's a lot of stuff in there, though. And on that front page, you won't see much Linux stuff, but go over to left-hand side and look for Linux. There's a lot of links in there on Linux and Ubuntu reference on issues and finding answers to your problems and cheat sheets to help you learn Linux and all kinds of things in there. So, I haven't gone through many of these, quite frankly, but it looks on the surface that this is a gold mine, whether you use Linux, Mac, or Windows, a gold mine of information.
Wait, I didn't see Mac. I didn't see Mac here. I see Linux, L, and miscellaneous, but I don't see Mac.
Well, you know what? I said Mac before looking. Yeah. You're absolutely right. I don't see any. I see DOS. There's something useful.
Yeah,
DOS.
Exactly. DOS.
Okay. So it is a 1990s website.
There it is.
No Mac OS 10. Okay. G-Geek. So anything but Mac.
And it's ggeek.com. I think we had time to do this. Well, no, actually we don't. Tell us what you're doing with the Going Linux podcast. Like, what's coming up next?
Okay, we have lots of stuff coming up. Our next episode is on open source licenses. We'll talk about what they are and what they mean to you.
Open source licenses.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
And we'll have an advanced episode following that in about a month. So that's our next one, open source licenses.
And so in other words, so if you want to get a license for open source –
So we're talking about the various licenses that publishers of software use to license their software. So, for example, there are a number of different open source licenses, including the MIT license that lets you do anything you want with the software. And then they become more and more restrictive as you go down the list. GPL version 2, for example, the GNU public license is our general public license, gives you a lot of freedom to give away the software or sell it or redesign it if you wish. And then GPL 3 is probably of open source licenses and one of the more restrictive.
And the MIT, you don't have to be a graduate of MIT to use the MIT license.
You do not.
Okay.
No.
I just want to clarify
contrary to popular belief.
All right. Well, I guess we are out of time. And again, Larry, I want to thank you so much for being with us here. Always a pleasure. And again, you'll be able to listen to all of this on any of our archives if you missed any of it. But thanks so much for being with us here tonight.
My pleasure.
Theme music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.